The J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. And Sam, a festival of football for you on Saturday. Seven games and kicking off in 1 hour intervals. So, yeah, you were... Well, I was going to say you were entertained for 8 hours straight, but yeah, some of the early games made you wish you were back tucked up in bed, I'm sure.
Yeah, for Halloween, I thought the J-League had played a trick on me for the first few games. It was absolutely horrendous, but luckily the games picked up as the day went on, and we got two very good games to end. So yeah, I can't complain too much after that feast of football.
All right then, yeah, so some goals went in at the sharp end of the table, but yeah, elsewhere, as we'll get on to later, there was not a lot to talk about from, the early games in match day 25. Before we get on to that, let's quickly touch, Sam, on the three games from last Wednesday. Kobe blew a 2-0 lead, but ended up winning 3-2 away at Sendai, with Douglas scoring a 77th-minute winner just seconds after Shun Nagasawa had equalised for Vegalta. But results were not as good for the other two ACL clubs. Yokohama F. Marinos lost 3-1 away at Hiroshima. And in a preview of this Saturday's Levain Cup final, Kashiwa ultimately cruised past FC Tokyo 3-1 away, with Cristiano lashing in a brace. So, the ACL clubs in action again in last midweek. Sam, any big takeaways from these three games before we welcome in our guest?
I mean, not really, to be honest. Although all three teams have had to rotate, neither are really going for anything, I don't think, anymore. I think Tokyo's results over the past week have probably ruled them out of ACL contention. The big game was probably the preview for the Levain Cup final, but Tokyo made quite a few changes, so we can't really gauge too much from that. It's probably maybe a morale-boosting victory for Kashiwa to get one over on Tokyo 10 days before the final, but really I don't think too much can be taken from them. But there were a lot of goals, and it was a lot more of an interesting set of fixtures than maybe a few of them from yesterday.
Most definitely. All right, so yeah, there were seven games from match day 25 played on Saturday. Cerezo Osaka, Kobe, Yokohama F. Marinos and Tosu had the weekend off because they had all played their match day 25 fixtures back in September. So, there were a couple of, big games on the match day 25 slate, I guess highlighted as usually is by the Tamagawa Classico, with Kawasaki hosting FC Tokyo. Of course, the Kawasaki looking to get a spot of revenge after Tokyo had defeated them at the same venue, Todoroki, in the Levain Cup semi-final. Joining us to talk about that game and indeed his team's historic season, it's a great pleasure to welcome Neil Debnam back to the pod. Neil, how are you?
I'm great, thanks a lot. Thanks for asking me again, and sorry to come on when it's your team that we beat, but thanks for asking me.
Not at all. And yes, this was pre-arranged before the game kicked off. We can let the listeners know that, Neil. So, no worries at all. And, win, lose or draw, was happy to have you on, mainly so we can keep giving your team the credit they deserve. I'm not sure if you've actually been able to step back and appreciate this season that your side has put together. I mean, obviously the game's coming so chunky and rapid, but it's now 12 consecutive wins. You're extending your J1 record for consecutive victories on a game-by-game basis. Obviously, it's 13 undefeated now, and obviously we can talk about this game from Saturday evening in detail very shortly. But, are you able to kind of take this in and appreciate the fact that your team are making history right in front of your eyes?
I think so. And I mean, sort of certainly some of the football we're playing at times is really exciting. And I'm just worried that it's going to ruin everything for like the next 10 years now, because I mean, anyone who started supporting Frontale this year is going to be in for a disappointing few years afterwards, because I don't think it'll ever get as good as this again. So yeah, I'm trying to enjoy it. And, I mean, of course, it's been said before, but I think we all wish that, or all Frontale fans wish that this season was being played under sort of normal conditions, because then we could enjoy it a bit more. But But yeah, I'm having a great time at the moment, and yeah, it's good to see. It's good to see the wins and the goals and, well, everything really. Yeah, it wouldn't be a J-Talk appearance for me without me saying that I'm cock-a-hoop, so I'm cock-a-hoop.
Just on that point, do you think that the lack of fans, especially at the start of the season, has taken away at all from this season? Or have you still been able to enjoy it in the same way that you might have enjoyed the 2017 and 2018 seasons?
Good question. Because we've basically, my wife is a ticket master, so we've been able to, not the company, and a ticket master. So we've been able to get tickets for pretty much every game that we've been able to go to. So we've been attending, but definitely the lack of singing does take a little bit of the edge off the experience. But I feel like now the experience is almost changed a little bit, and I mean, I've just finished writing my latest blog post. I didn't put it up before this because I didn't want anyone to read it because Ben might be angry with me. I in the blog post I said that it was especially weird in this game having away fans, because like I think we'd all kind of got used to the sort of corona times supporting, where you're just basically having a little clap-a-thon, and it's like a nice experience for everybody. But with the away fans there, it was really weird. It's like, why are these people clapping when we're not doing something good? What's going on? And it was like, I preferred it with no away fans. I know that sounds stupid, but with no away fans, I could kind of see it as something very different to sort of last the usual season experience. But yesterday was weird. It was really weird, and I can't quite get over it yet. But I mean, I'm dramatizing it slightly, but yeah, there's definitely a little bit of the shine has been taken off. But I think, I just hope we'll be able to exclaim by the end of the year. It's probably unlikely, but it would be very strange to win the league and just be able to applaud politely and that's it, and sort of get told off if we open our mouths too much. So yeah, strange times, but I mean, for all of us in Japan, I think we're kind of living the dream in a way compared to many other countries, so I shouldn't complain about it at all.
Fair enough. So it was a bit weird on Saturday evening because you actually conceded a goal at home, Neil, just the second time in the month of October. It was the only time in the month of October you conceded a goal at Todoroki in the three games you hosted there. Okay, well, let's get on to events in the game at Todoroki on Saturday night then. So, Sam, the first 20 minutes, I actually quite enjoyed them. Obviously, Tokyo didn't have as much of the ball as Kawasaki. I expected that going into the game, but Hirotaka Mita forced a save from Jun Sung Ryong in the first 40 seconds. There were obviously chances for Frontale as well. Kengo Nakamura blasted a shot against the bar in the 13th minute. There were chances at both ends, and Mita forced another save from Jung as the first 20 minutes progressed. And the first 20 minutes ended with Kaoru Mitoma having a shot smothered by Go Hatano. But as far as the first 20 minutes of Clásicos go, I thought it was not possession-wise, obviously, but in terms of chances, fairly even. And I obviously wasn't prepared for what was to come. But what were your impressions of the opening exchanges, Sam?
Yeah, I really enjoyed the first 20 minutes. Often with Kawasaki games, it's no disrespect to them, but they dominate possession. It's just camped in one half, and it's just, when are Kawasaki going to score? But in this game, Tokyo are a perfect opponent, I think, in that they are able to counter-attack. They were doing that quite well. There was a good battle, as you mentioned, between Jung and Mita. I think he made a couple of good saves from him. But yeah, Tokyo are definitely in the game. I think they needed to get the first goal, and it's kind of been an issue for them in the last few games, actually, not being able to take their chances when they're there. And yeah, But yeah, it was a really good open game. Nakamura's shot was fantastic off the crossbar, and yeah, very open. I mean, compared to what I was watching earlier, this was fantastic. So yeah, really enjoyed it. But I think yeah, that failure to take the lead has really cost Tokyo in this game.
Indeed, indeed. So yeah, Neil, what about from your perspective? You were, I'm not sure how confident you were going in. You obviously, yeah, you were, you deserve to be hugely confident with the way your side's been playing. But yeah, how did you think the opening exchanges went?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember, to be honest. I remember thinking that the meter shot, the early meter shot was a bit of a warning for us. And I think that kind of sort of paved the path for the rest of the game, really, in that we didn't look particularly comfortable at the back for most of the game. I think we, Jesse O and Taniguchi were, didn't have their best game. And I think Yamane was sort of caught out of position quite a lot. But, I mean, thankfully, we didn't concede more. And I kind of felt, from sort of just writing this blog post, what I said in that was that I kind of felt that we didn't really seem like we were in too much trouble at the back, even though we were looking a bit flopsy is the word I want to use for some reason. I don't know what that means, but... So even though we looked a bit flopsy, I felt like, sort of judging from the early exchanges, that it felt like maybe we were going to have trouble putting the ball in the back of the net. And I guess that's kind of how the game went on a little bit, that we had a hell of a lot of shots. But we had one guy in the Tokyo goal who was frustrating us quite a lot. And also... the fact that we were putting the ball over the bar and wide quite a lot as well. But yeah, going into the game, I wasn't confident because of, well, I'm never confident about anything, but I wasn't confident because of the way you did us last time, basically. And it kind of made sense that you came and tried to do the same thing again, I guess. But I was really surprised that that we were just allowed to just like play the ball around at the back, and Tokyo really sat off us. So I don't know why I was surprised, because I guess that's what I was expecting, but it seemed kind of shocking because it hasn't happened so much recently. But yeah, I wasn't confident going into the game, and I wasn't really confident throughout the game, but yeah, that's me really, I guess so.
Well, let's talk about the penalty then. It was awarded for a foul by Tsuyoshi Watanabe on Leandro Damião. Leandro's a big fella. He seems to me like if he wants to run to a spot, he can usually get there pretty adequately under his own steam. But he looks to have taken a decent tumble here. I'm not sure really what if Watanabe's done a huge amount wrong. The referee obviously thinks he has. And, to be fair, I mean, there weren't huge protestations from the Tokyo players. So whether he's blocked his run that began outside the box and ended inside it. I don't know, Sam. I'm not crying too much over this because the Tokyo players didn't, but it didn't look a particularly nailed-on penalty to me, but one that the referee gave and Akihiro Ienaga converted.
Yeah, it's been surprisingly well-received, this, and I think it's never a penalty in all the world. The ball through, Damian's never going to get on the end of it. It's always going to the goalkeeper. And the replays didn't help, but once you look at them and slow them down, Watanabe makes contact outside the box, and then there's no contact when he's in the box, and then Damian just goes down. So, yeah, for me, no penalty at all. And I'd have been protesting a lot more if I was a Tokyo defender. I just think maybe Watanabe just thinking, oh, here we go again after the week before and everything going against him. You probably shouldn't. He shouldn't be pulling Damião. He does make give the referee a decision to make, but I think he's been harshly done to.
Yeah, the listeners are probably tired of me crying about decisions going against FC Tokyo in recent weeks, Sam. So, yeah, I'll just leave it there. And, you can have the final word on that. That's fair enough for me. And now let me take the listeners behind the curtain and indeed let Sam and Neil know why we've began the recording of this podcast at 10 minutes later than our usual start time. That is because, I'm a bit of a masochist, it must be said, but I went back and watched the last 20 minutes of the first half again because I wanted to count how many passes FC Tokyo players played to each other inside the Kawasaki half after the game restarted after Ienaga's penalty. Ienaga's penalty went in the 24th minute. The players then went off for their water break. So for the basically for the last 20 minutes plus stoppage time of the first half, FC Tokyo players played a grand total of 3 passes to each other inside the Kawasaki Frontale half. 3 completed passes, that is. There were plenty of times that Tokyo players dribbled into the Kawasaki half and then promptly lost the ball. And there was one time when Tokyo had a throw on the left-hand side, alongside the box. But Ryoya Ogawa promptly threw it out for a goal kick before Diego Oliveira could touch it. And I could say 4 passes were completed, but Masato Morishige once dribbled into the Kawasaki half and then passed back into his own half to Tsuyoshi Watanabe. The last 20 minutes of the first half, Neil, were a total and utter domination by your team. It was absolutely suffocating. FC Tokyo were a goal down in the game, looking to get back into it. Your team did not give Tokyo one little sniff. They were never, ever close to your box. As I say, 3 passes completed in the final 20 minutes of the first half inside your half was, it was a domination the likes of which I haven't seen for quite a long time. I'm not sure if you've done that to too many other teams this season. You feel free to tell me how many times you have, but that was just absolutely astonishing from your side, after taking the lead.
Yeah, it's definitely a good period for us, which is probably an understatement. But yeah, I think it was the midfield yesterday. The defence was flopsy, but the midfield 3 just seemed in total control, and it was really nice to watch. But like I said, the problem was that we didn't sort of take any of our opportunities from this period. So that was a little bit worrying. I mean, I didn't notice it was quite such a dominance, but. Yeah, I'm pleased you pointed it out. I'm very happy to hear that. But, I don't know. I mean, you didn't give me an opportunity to talk about the penalty. So, I don't know. I couldn't see anything from the replays. I couldn't see anything in the stadium. But, yeah, it was definitely soft. But we should have had another. We should have had one on the 41st minute anyway, I reckon, from a handball in the box. So, I mean, I think these things even themselves out, don't they?
Well, yeah, I think there was one in about the 63rd minute when the ball hit Yamane's hand in midfield. So, yeah, it's swings and roundabouts, Neil. We didn't get that free kick, so you didn't get that penalty. So I think they even out, don't they? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm happy with the way it evened over the 90 minutes. So.
Yeah, fair enough.
What did you think, actually? Sorry to interrupt. What did you think of Matsuo? I thought he had an absolute nightmare yesterday. I thought he was terrible, the awful referee. And I mean, I know I always like to moan about referees, but I thought this was just, I was talking to the FC Tokyo Kai guys about this, and we had differing opinions, so presumably you all as well. But I thought, aside from the penalty, which if we're agreeing he got wrong, I think he got every other decision wrong in the game. I think it was like 100% disaster for him. So, I mean, I don't know what you think, but that was just something that I went away from the game with.
After the last 20 minutes of the first half, my spirit was absolutely broken. So I can't say I really noticed the referee affecting the game too much. I don't know, Sam, did you think that Mr. Matsuo had a particular howler? We don't want to call Neil out on his opinion here, but did you notice too much that the referee had gotten wrong?
Like, I didn't like the penalty decision, but I don't know if it's just because I never have a horse in any race, but I don't really notice the referees too much. I'll notice, like, the major decisions that are right or wrong, but really, throughout the flow of the game, especially when you're watching multiple at a time, I can't really give a qualified opinion on how well the referee did this week. So if Neil says that he wasn't refereeing it very well, I'll take him at his word.
Do you have previous with Mr. Matsuo, Neil? Is he one of your least favourites, or was he just particularly egregious for you on this occasion? I mean, the J-League stats website has it 17 free kicks to 9 in Tokyo's favour, which I guess is slightly unusual for an away team. You'd expect Kawasaki to get refereed as the inverted commas home team. So I guess from that stat, I can see where you're coming from. Were there any major ones apart from the handball penalty that you think he got particularly wrong?
I just think he was all over the place, I felt. And as for history, I'm really glad you asked me, because I didn't really remember his name, so I checked back on my old blog posts, and yeah, apparently I do have history with him. I don't know. I just thought, because, I mean, I don't want to, I've been boring on about this on Twitter a lot about my most disliked player in the world getting off with the punch, Leandro. And then I was wondering who was gonna have a swing in this game. And I thought, like, I remember Diego, like, fouling. I haven't found it on the highlights, so maybe this is just a alcohol-induced memory. But I remember Diego making a foul, the referee blowing for the foul, and Diego getting right up in the referee's face. And I thought Diego was going to swing at him. And I thought, it's like contagious. The punching is contagious between those Brazilian guys. But yeah, now I'm just a bad winner, I guess. Sorry, yeah. It's a very undesirable thing to say, but just that Leandro, I really don't like him.
Yeah, I can see that. Don't worry about it. Yeah, he's done very well for us on the pitch since he's come in, but yes, he's clearly not the not the most lily white of characters. But Sam, so basically it was a miracle that Tokyo went into the sheds at halftime just 1-0 down, I felt, after, as I say, that utter domination of the last 20 minutes by Kawasaki, where they just did not let Tokyo breathe at all in the game.
Yeah, I mean, if it was a combat sport, the referee would have stopped it and Tokyo would be put out of their misery, but they managed to survive somehow, some way. I thought, yeah, just camped in their half. I don't know whether to admire you or feel sorry for you for the extra research you did in looking at Tokyo's passing in the opposition half, but yeah, I wouldn't know to that extent, but it was just utter domination and how they survived. I think a lot of credit has to go to Hatano in goal. I mean, he's come in for the last couple of games. I often think that Hayashi is left as a scapegoat whenever you lose quite heavily and Hatano comes in, but I thought he made a lot of very good saves. His anticipation with the through balls coming through, he was there. He made, yeah, terrific saves. There was one from Nakamura, I think it was it this half or the second half, but there's one quite close range and he sticks out an arm and he just, yeah, terrific save. So yeah, he did very well. I thought you defended last ditchly at least quite well, and a lot of teams will cave under that pressure. We've seen it time and time again where Kawasaki get their first goal and then immediately have scored two, maybe three in the next couple of minutes. So to survive, I think you give credit to Tokyo, but yeah, it was an absolute battering for that final 20 minutes.
And then a formation change at halftime for Tokyo with Mita from midfield going off and Takumi Nakamura coming on, and Tokyo changing to a back three with wing backs. I mean, the first 10 minutes of the second half continued on basically the same pattern as the last 20 of the first, with Kawasaki suffocating any sort of attempt by Tokyo to get back into the game. But then when Tokyo were finally allowed to possess the ball, Neil, for a sustained period, they went and scored a goal. Diego Oliveira firing in from close range at Jun Sung Ryong's near post in the 12th minute of the second half. To say it was against the run of play is the understatement of the decade. Somehow, some way, as I say, they were finally allowed to play Tokyo, and after missing those chances in the first 20 minutes, they probably realised they weren't going to get too many more, so they better take this one. And to Diego's credit, and I'm sure to Jung's frustration, he was able to work the ball home at the near post, and somehow Tokyo were level.
Yeah, I don't think he expected him to shoot. And I think I heard, I mean, I can't imagine how I heard this, because I don't think I would have understood the Japanese particularly easily, or the Portuguese, but maybe I read it somewhere that Diego said he he saw he had a bit of an angle and he just thought he'd go for it. And yeah, I don't think he expected him to do that. And because of the flopsy defence, he got a bit of space. And yeah, it's a good finish. And I mean, I don't mind Diego. I'm like a broken record here, but I think he seems like he's a decent fella. So good for him. Apart from the penalty run up, of course. But, yeah. Well done to him for putting it away. But it did feel at that stage like this is a disaster. We really needed to score when we're on top, and then we've just basically handed a lifeline basically. But yeah, I mean it wasn't. I mean, I think you had about 10 shots in the game, didn't you? So it wasn't completely one way. But that sort of period in the second half after the goal, it felt like we were not wobbling, but we didn't look particularly sure of ourselves. And because of, I mean, I'm going to say it for a second time, Hatanol played a blinder, I think. So I was always worried about us not being able to get past him again. But one thing about Hatanol is makes a lot of noise, doesn't he? Have you noticed in the game?
Yeah.
And maybe it's because there's no crowd noise either. But ooh, he's a loud fella. He really likes to have a shout. But yeah, full credit to him. I think he definitely kept you in the game. But I don't know if this is an early seg to the next goal, but he couldn't really do much about that. It almost took the winning goal. It almost took his head off, really, I think. So I mean, he had a great game. And yeah, that seems to be what I'm saying over and over. So maybe I'll shut up now.
Well, no, he's a precocious youngster. No question about that. Go Hatano. And he enjoys it when he makes a big save. And he doesn't mind letting the forward know. And often I worry that's going to come back and bite him. As regular listeners know, I am a believer in the jinx, and you don't want to be bigging yourself up too much. He was very, very happy to save one from Ianaga in the second half. And then, Kengo Nakamura in the 74th minute. Sam, I mean, this game was the momentum was amazing, really, wasn't it, the way it swung? I mean, we said the first 20 minutes was even, at least in terms of chances. Then, basically, in the game, the next half hour was utterly dominated by Frontale. The Tokyo goal evened things up again, but then, inside the last 20 minutes, there was only ever really going to be one winner, wasn't there? And it was Kaoru Mitoma, who, obviously, listeners know we're huge fans of on here. Amazing first-year player for Frontale. He turned... which side was he? It was Takumi Nakamura's side, or was it Hotaka's side? I can't remember. But he turned him inside out on a couple of occasions, cut the ball back for Kengo Nakamura to score the winner in the 74th minute. Now, if only Kengo was celebrating a personal milestone to make this winning goal even sweeter, then we could have all ridden off into the sunset happy. But, Sam, yeah, Kengo, Kengo's got the goal, and it just happened to be his 40th birthday.
Yeah, absolutely perfect for him. I'm delighted for him. Because when you get an ACL injury at 39, not many players are going to be able to come back from that. Not many players are going to be able to play at the level that Nakamura has done. I thought he was fantastic throughout that game, and he has been in his kind of more cameo appearances since coming back from injury. So, yeah, really happy for him. I think Dan Orlowitz kind of labelled this as a kind of a passing of the torch goal into the way that the youngster, the rookie Mitoma, just does so well that he's done it all season to get to the byline, cuts it back, and Nakamura's finish is absolutely perfect into the roof of the net. Yeah, wonderful way to celebrate his 40th birthday. I think we'll get on to the rest of his news a little bit later on. But yeah, a very good weekend for Kengo Nakamura, and it couldn't happen to a nicer guy.
Most definitely. Now, Neil, full disclosure here. Once the goal went in, I made use of the DAZN skip forward 30 seconds function on a couple of occasions because I didn't want to see what ridiculous celebration Kengo did right in front of the cameras. So I spared myself that. And indeed, the commentators, while he was setting up his celebration, the commentators might have mentioned how many goals he scored in Clásicos in his lengthy and decorated career. But, yeah, this ended up being the winner in the 237th Clásico. So a huge feather in his cap on, his 40th birthday, a milestone for himself as well. What can you say about the legend of your club and in terms of the pantheon of J-League greats? I mean, he's well and truly in the top three, the top five. There's no questions asked. So I'm sure you couldn't contain yourself at the fact that he'd scored the winner in this particular game.
Yeah, it's really nice. I can't really say more than you've said already, that he's a legend, a one club man. I think he had offers to go elsewhere, didn't, and stayed with us. Maybe not necessarily the best for him, but it certainly endears him to the fans. And I mean, I don't know if he's one of those players who home fans love him, opposition fans don't like him, because I can understand that sometimes maybe the kind of he's so associated with Frontale that maybe if you don't like the team, you won't like him. And like you said about the goal celebrations, but I mean, yeah, we all love him. I'm wearing my Kengo t-shirt today. I got that out for some special reason that maybe you'll go on to later. But yeah, it's not like you notice he's 40 really. I mean, admittedly, he slows down a little bit in games recently, and he hasn't played so much this year. But he's still fully on the ball. He's on top of his game still. And I mean, I guess that's why he got the league MVP a few years ago, oldest player ever to do so. And yeah, I mean, plenty of other people will say better things more eloquently about him than I can. So I'll just say that. He's a great guy and he's a great player, and yeah, I was really happy with that goal because he shoots and he shoots on target, unlike some of the other players. A lot of the time, he's got quality. I really wish that first half one had gone in instead though, because that was a beast. But yeah. But yeah, this was another blaster. So I'm really happy about it.
Yeah, can't blame you. And so Sam's teased it already, and we have buried the lead off the top here, listeners. Frontale called a press conference for 3 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. One of two big news stories that broke in J1 on Sunday. We'll get to the other later on in part two when Sam and I wrap up the other games from match day 25. But at 3 o'clock, Kengo Nakamura appeared and gave his thoughts on the passing of Sean Connery. And he didn't do that. He announced that he would be retiring at the end of the season. And Neil, I'll come back to you. Did you think he would ride off into the sunset? As you said, a one club man, and he deserves enormous credit for that. Did you think he might go the route of Yasuhito Endo, who's now moved down to J2 and is has become a regular straight off the top after his move with Jubilo Iwata? Did you think he might want to carry on playing in J2 or J3? Obviously, you think this is a fitting ending. Did you think it was going to end like this for Kengo?
Yeah, I think so. To be honest, I can't really understand why Endo did that, but maybe I haven't been paying enough attention and he wasn't playing much. But I think Kengo was always going to get games, especially this season with the sort of big rotation. It seemed like the right time. It seems like the right time to me. Like for the last few years, my end of season blog survey, I've been asking the question, what's Kengo's role next year? And sort of with the thought in mind that his career was coming nearing the end, the final curtain or something. But it's weird when we heard there was a press conference yesterday. When we heard yesterday there was a press conference, a few things sort of flashed through the mind, because I heard we've been linked with a Brazilian defender. So we thought maybe that was a new announcement, a new signing announcement. There's sort of the mysterious absence of Oshima recently. So we thought maybe Oshima's going somewhere, but it didn't seem very likely. And then we sort of hit upon the idea that maybe it was it was going to be Kengo retiring, and my wife wasn't very happy with that idea because she's a super Kengo fan. But yeah, I guess, I mean, if you guess enough options, eventually you'll get one right. So so I'm going to take credit for that. But yeah, it was. Is it a shock? I'm not sure it's a shock. I think he's doing the right thing. I mean, I it's better to go out on a high, and he's kind of got an, I mean, I'm not going to jinx anything, but he's got a very good opportunity to go out on a high because of the way the lead we've got in the league, and also the way the Emperor's Cup is going to be this year. So, I mean, I think, I don't know if it's possible that we won't qualify for the Emperor's Cup semi-final. I think it probably is impossible now. So that would be a game against a lower league opposition, if I'm right. I'm not sure. So you've got to think that we've got a decent chance of getting to the final. And it's kind of, it seems like it's set up almost too perfectly for him to continue. And sort of also I heard that, I heard through the interview that he always intended to retire at the age of 40, and the injury kind of looked like it might have put a spanner in the works. So basically at that stage it was either, do I retire now, or do I like put myself through hell trying to come back for maybe a couple of games next year? And I think everyone's delighted that he did put himself through hell for us. So it'll be a real shame if we're not allowed to sing his song anymore, because like to sort of see him off with his song because of coronavirus. But I mean I'm just going around in circles, but I mean there's a lot worse things in the world than not being able to sing a song. But I mean, he kind of deserves to get a big send-off, and hopefully we can give him a big send-off, and hopefully he can give himself a big send-off with some one trophy maybe, or maybe two trophies, or I don't know. But yeah, I'm not going to jinx anything, but yeah, he deserves all the praise anyone can give him, I think. And he seems like he's a nice guy as well. So,
yeah, no question. One of the absolute icons of the J-League. And, yeah, the fact that he's going under his own power and, yeah, deciding when to call it quits is, well, yeah, something that every athlete deserves. And, yeah, he's earned that right with his performances. And as Sam says, yeah, to fight back after an ACL injury at such an advanced age for a footballer, of course, and yeah, to come back and then to put him in a performance like he did on Saturday night, one of the highlights of his season, no question, a game he always looks forward to, and more often than not, his team comes out on top in, and he scored his fair share of Clasico goals. And an absolute superstar of the game, Sam. So, yeah, feel free to weigh in on your thoughts on Kengo as well, and then maybe segue on to, well, I guess the last 15 minutes of this game, because, obviously Tokyo had to chase it again. But, a couple of half chances here and there. But, there was only ever really going to be one winner, wasn't there, after Nakamura had put Frontale back in front.
Yeah, and just on Nakamura, I mean, I've only watched the J-League for the last 6 years, but not many players have given me more pleasure watching the league than Nakamura. Just the class that he plays the game with, the technique, he plays with character as well. I know you're skipping his celebrations, but it's definitely something unique that he has. It's just, yeah, it's really good to watch. Such a good player. He's like the old cliche of a fine wine getting better with age. I think he's just been, yeah, a terrific asset to the league. He and Endo have earned the right to decide what to do with their career, and he's going out on the highest of highest, potentially with a potential double here this season. So yeah, fantastic player. I will really miss watching him in the league, but yeah, I'm very glad to have been able to watch him for the last few years. And then yeah, just going back onto the rest of this game, I thought, as we've mentioned before, Hatano made a lot of very fine saves towards the end. The one you mentioned previously with the Ianago, it's just the best bit about him, I think, as well as his shot stopping, but it was his anticipation, because the way that Kawasaki can get through the lines of the defence, especially when Tokyo pushed a little bit higher towards the end of the game, it needs a goalkeeper to be able to kind of anticipate that, to see the danger, spot it. He was quick off his line, making a lot of saves low down with his feet as well. So yeah, he had a fantastic game and really kept Kawasaki at bay. Tokyo had a couple of chances. There were a couple of breaks where maybe the pass wasn't quite right. I think there was one shot from a Dailton that Junks managed to save, but really I think Kawasaki, even with their flopsy defence, were quite comfortable towards the end, and yeah, pretty comfortable victors in the, yeah, by the end of the 90 minutes.
Yes, indeed. All right, so Neil, the, all you've got to do now is obviously officially seal the title, but there's yeah, that will be done yeah, sooner rather than later. You've obviously got to get 5 more points, so 2 more wins will get you the single season J1 record for points in a season, and then well, yeah, we know from last week it was 14. You've won, and Gumba have won this weekend, so it's now 11 points that you need to guarantee a third title in 4 seasons. And yeah, as you've said, basically it's almost mathematically impossible. It is basically impossible that you're not going to finish in the top 2. So you will be in the Emperor's Cup semi-finals with yet a chance to raise another trophy on New Year's Day. So, yeah, this dream season just continues. Of course, it's been a nightmare for a lot of teams with the way these games have been piling up on top of each other. I just wonder if there's any chance, if you could give someone, and now I'm glad that the Tokyo Games out of the way, if you could just give someone a huge tonking, and then the possibility of your goal difference finishing the season higher than the second highest goals for column, because I mean, you know, it would just be a superfluous record. But I mean, that's something you could shout off the rooftops for years and years to come. I mean, currently the goal difference of plus 50 is it's second in the league. To Yokohama F. Marinos' 59 goals scored. So if you could somehow beat someone 10-0, which is clearly not beyond your team, you would then obviously, yeah, you'd have the goals for column in your favour, and you'd also have a better goal difference than the next best goals for column. But yeah, I'm kind of just rambling here by this point of the podcast as well, Neil. We want to try and give this give your team the credit they're due, because it's yeah, there's never been a domination like this in J1. And there, I mean, there's caveats. It's Corona. It's games on top of each other. It's this, that, and the other. But we've just never seen a team play this consistently well in any season in J1 history. And it's, yeah, as I said a few weeks ago, we had gotten a little bit blasé about it, I think, on this podcast. And obviously, myself, I set the agenda. So it was just, you know, Frontale won again, Frontale won again. They can slip down the running order. But, yes, sooner or later, I just had to wake up and say, hang on a second, you've just got to give this team their due. And, well, yeah, we probably won't have you on too many more times this season. We'd love to have you on once it's officially won. But, yeah, we wanted to give you basically a platform as well to wax lyrical about your team. So before we let you go, I suppose, we've obviously covered a lot of ground already, but is there a favourite game for you this season, a breakout player that has taken you by surprise, or anything that you wanted to mention about your history-making team before we let you go?
Tough question.
Extremely long one as well, yeah.
It's funny, going back to what you said about the big, giving someone a big tonking. I mean, of course it won't happen now, but we are, on Tuesday we do have Consadole at home, and I know they're not going to sit back, so there's a possibility of a few goals in that game. We'll probably lose it now, I've said that. But we gave them a bit of a pasting at our place last year or year before, I can't remember. As for favourite games, I don't know. I mean, my favourite games are always away games, and it's been kind of denied this year. And the whole weird atmosphere is, I don't know, I feel for me, it's like the experience of watching football is more than, of course, it's more than what's actually on the pitch. What's on the pitch is important, and what's on the pitch has been fantastic this year, but it's been the sort of the peripheral aspects have been denied. So I wouldn't say I've got a favourite game. Breakout players, I mean, it's hard to look beyond Mitoma, even though he's gone slightly off the boil recently. I think on Saturday he's coming back again. I think Hatate kind of went under the radar. He got submerged under the Mitoma hype slightly. and I think he's really going to be something quite special too. And I don't know. I mean, I'm just saying the young players' names. it's kind of not much. I'm pleased to see Manabu Saito back a little bit again, because I think he was considering retiring last season. So it's good to see him back and apparently enjoying football again. I mean, it's been good to see everyone play, really. And I think we've still got a chance for some more people to sort of put their stamp make some kind of impact, because I mean Kobayashi probably won't be back for a while, so I think we're going to see Yamamura up front after seeing him in defence and on the bench only recently. So yeah, I think there's still opportunity for some more new goal scorers kind of thing. And I don't know if we manage to sew up the title early, I don't know if Oniki will really rotate and we can see some of the people who haven't even got onto the bench, but that would be nice. But at the same time, I guess he's probably, if he does win the title, he probably wants to like really win it, so I'm not sure quite how much we'll see of anyone else. So yeah, basically I've just mentioned pretty much every player in the team. So yeah, well done all of you.
No, fair enough then. Well, yeah, I mean, we wonder where this this winning run will end. Despite your best attempts to reverse jinx it there, Neil, I doubt it will be on Tuesday at home against Sapporo. But then, yeah, a couple of big clashes in a row after the Levain Cup final break, with Kashima away and then Yokohama F. Marinos at home. So they're a couple of huge ones. And then you have second-placed Gamba at the end of November as well in match day 29. So, they're three to look forward to, and three further tests of your team. By the time that Gamba game comes around, you probably will have already sewn up the title. So, or that could be the finishing touches at Todoroki when you host the second-place team, as they are currently, of course. All right then, Sam. So, any final words from you on Frontale before we send Neil on his way?
Oh, man, it's pretty difficult to add anything to that. They've been a fantastic team all season. There's very little weak point in the team. I think maybe Miki Yamane, I'd highlight him, because last season right back was a real issue for the team after El Seno left. They never really settled on someone. He didn't really like Maguinho and everyone else that was there. So Yamane came in, really played as a right-sided centre-back for Shonan, so he's had to shift his position, but he's made that position his own for Kawasaki. He's involved, he's scoring goals, he's going forward. I think defensively he's good enough, maybe not quite as much as you'd like, but I think he does enough for them at the back. Yeah, and that issue has been solved now. It was always a bit where, oh, maybe we'll have to shift Kurumaya to right back or just play other players out of position. So it's got rid of that headache. It's kept Kawasaki a really settled side at the back, the best defensive record quite comfortably in the league. So, yeah, I'll give him props as well. But, I mean, you can pick out any player from this team. Even when they've rotated and played like the second string, they've always come up and you produce the goods. So, yeah, fantastic team all the way through and fully deserving of every record that comes their way.
Yeah, well, it has been a record-setting season. Well, it's going to end up being a record-setting season for Frontale. And, yeah, a 2-1 home win over Tokyo in the Classico, the latest instalment of that. So, Neil, we've gone big on your team this week, but very much wanted to do it. Thanks for sticking with us for so long on this week's episode. Great to speak to you again. And, you don't want to jinx anything, I know. But, yeah, enjoy it when it happens in the next few weeks. Your team is, the likes that we've never seen before in J1. So, keep enjoying it. And, we'll have you on hopefully once it's all done and dusted. But, for this week, thanks again for your time. And, we look forward to speaking to you again soon.
No problem. Thanks a lot for inviting me. It's always a pleasure.
Okay, thanks again to Neil, and a reminder, you can check him out on Twitter at Frontale Rabbit, and of course his blog, the Frontale Rabbit blog as well. Check it out. Although I'm not sure I will want to as an FC Tokyo supporter after the Classico on Saturday night. All right, well, after a quick hit of music, Sam and I will be back to round up the other six games from Saturday. All right, always great to catch up with Neil and chat about his history-making side. But we'll move on to the rest of the Matchday 25 slate that was played on Saturday, Sam. And, with Kawasaki, the leaders winning, their second place, the Gunma Osaka, who are obviously the most likely but still the most unlikely team to overtake them. They held up their end of the bargain with a 2-1 home win over Sapporo, but they had to come from behind after Douglas Oliveira's ninth-minute opener for Sapporo. It had taken him a while to score his first J-League goal, but he finally broke his duck last week, and then he enjoyed that so much he doubled his fun with the opener here at the Panasonic Stadium.
Yeah, I was personally quite disappointed with this goal after we'd picked up Higashiguchi last week as the nailed-on goalkeeper of our team of the year, but he really should have done a lot better with this. It's a pretty scuffed shot from Douglas. It does spin around, but I have no idea how it manages to get between Higashiguchi and the post. He won't want to see that again, but, I mean, it's good for Douglas. Hopefully he gets a bit of confidence now after two goals in two games. I thought he played pretty well, actually, him and Anderson Lopez in this game linking up. And the way that Bothroyd did in last week, he missed the game with his ankle injury, but Douglas stepped in quite well, and Sapporo played really well for large parts of this game. But I think you've got to give a lot of credit to Gamba for the way they came back against Sapporo. They scored pretty quickly afterwards, and then it was a very tough game, but they toughed it out at the back and, took their chances when they came. So it was a very, very good win for Gamba, and a one that you have to win if you're going to play for these ACL spots.
Indeed, indeed. So, behind inside the first 10 minutes, but, as Sam's mentioned, Gamba made a almost immediate reply with Yosuke Idaguchi's controlled finish from just beyond the penalty spot in the 16th minute. And then Patrick came off the bench, and with his first touch, his glancing header from Yuki Yamamoto's free kick gave Gamba the lead just past the hour. And from there, Sam, were there any nervous moments? And did Higashiguchi need to be at his attentive best, or had Sapporo pretty much run their race by that stage of the game?
No, there were definitely nervy moments. They brought Chanatip on, who was back after injury. He obviously adds such a different dimension to the way that they go forward. They didn't really... There was still the lack of cutting edge maybe in the final third. They had a lot of breakaways where the pass at the end didn't quite work out, or the final shot wasn't really too much that Higashiguchi had to deal with. He made a few decent saves, but... Yeah, I think he himself was quite comfortable, but there were moments in that game where Sapporo gave absolutely as good as they got going forward. And there was that one, I forgot about it actually, I don't know how, but it was like 88th minute, there was Tanaka had a header from a corner that Higashiguchi did make a very good save from. It was then recycled, it comes to Kim Min-tai just outside the 6-yard box. He has a shot, it deflects off a defender, hits the bar, hits the crossbar, and then bounces off a flying Miyazawa on the goal line, who somehow can't turn it in. So yeah, definitely a ropey moment there that I forgot about, but yeah, Gamba hung on, they took their chances, as I said. It was a quite inspired substitution to get Patrick on, because it took Usami off, whose set pieces had been woeful all game. So they moved Yamamoto onto him. His first one was on the money. Patrick was there to head it in to go 2-1 up. So, yeah, that was a very nice goal for him. It shows the quantum of depth that they have. Even without Adam Milson, they've still got three pretty good strikers there. But, yeah, Sapporo were a little unlucky. I thought they gave a lot. They put a lot of effort into this game, but Gamba just squeak out another result. And I also want to mention Yosuke Idaguchi. He scored the goal, of course, but his performance without the ball was absolutely fantastic. The way that Sapporo play with their two kind of attacking midfielders in behind the striker, it leaves a lot of work for the opposition holding midfielder to do. And Idaguchi was absolutely everywhere. He snuffed out so many attacks, and that kind of position does go unnoticed a lot, but I thought Idaguchi was fantastic, and it's taken him a little while, I think, just to get up to those levels that he was at maybe when he was pre-World Cup 2018, so he then went to Europe. It's not worked out for him, but yeah, he was absolutely everywhere. A terrific engine on him in this game, and I think he was rightfully awarded the man of the match.
Yeah, fair enough. And so, this game was actually played in front of the biggest crowd of the J1 season so far since we've resumed after the long four-month hiatus, of course. Over 16,000 in at the Panasonic Stadium, and they got their money's worth, no question. And, yeah, that late flurry from Sapporo, Sam, I'd actually forgotten it myself, but when you were recalling it, yes, I do remember it from the highlights, and how Miyazawa has not turned that in, or he did his best, he just flung himself at it, didn't he? But
yeah.
I think he even tried to handle it into the net, but he wasn't even able to do that. But it was, quite a let-off for Gumba right at the death. And, this 3 points obviously keeps them, well, it keeps pace with Frontale, but of course, yes, they're 17 points behind, so they're not really keeping pace, if you get my drift. But well done to Gumba, and also well done to Nagoya, who hauled themselves up to third in the table, with the FC Tokyo losing away at Kawasaki, and of course Cerezo Osaka having the weekend off. They had already played their match day 25 fixture. Well, Nagoya took full advantage. And, unsurprisingly, it was their talisman, Mateus, who was at the centre, Sam, of their 2-0 away victory over Kashima. But, I'm not sure what you thought. I think we had similar opinions on the penalty in the Kawasaki FC Tokyo game, although I didn't want to whinge about it too much. What did you think about the incident that ultimately led to Mu Kanazaki putting Nagoya ahead against his former team in the 7th minute after Mateus was fouled on the edge of the box?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think there's a large build-up in this. The way the game started, it was so feisty. There were aerial challenges, people barging over anyone. It was a bit of a fight, really, for the first 5 minutes. And this penalty decision came right at the end of that. I think it's silly from Izumi that it just takes a ridiculous swipe in the area. He maybe catches Mateus, and it's a glancing blow at best, and Mateus flings himself to the ground. So it's soft in that way, but I don't know. Izumi... Yeah, when you swing like that, nowhere near the ball, you're again giving the referee a decision to make. So he's seen that and given the penalty. And I think, it's so soft the way it goes. I mean, you don't want it given against you, but I think you can see why the referee has awarded the penalty.
I think his boot makes contact with Mateus, but never around his stomach region, which Mateus appears to be clutching as he slumps to the turf. So it's one of those. Yeah, I agree. It's Izumi. He's foolish to lash out with his boot, but I don't know. I think we've complained enough about I have indeed complained enough about referees in the last few weeks, so we'll probably just let this one slide. But Nagoya took an early lead through Kanazaki's penalty, and then Mateus's sublime first time chip over Yuya Aoki in the 92nd minute settled it. So an early goal and a very, very late goal for Nagoya to win it. And I should mention that the clincher from Mateus came after Aoki had covered himself in glory with a clearance out of his own box that ended up being recycled, and Mateus applied the finishing touches to this game. So an early goal for Grampus and a late one to clinch it. In between, Sam, did you think they just about deserved it, or had Antlers pushed them as best they could throughout the course of the 90 minutes?
I think they deserved it in the way that Kashima were pretty toothless going forward, which is, there have been a couple of games recently where they haven't really clicked going forward, and I'm not really sure why. It's the same players that have been playing quite well in their kind of revitalization this season, but really Nagoya were quite comfortable at the back. The game was very bitty. The way that Nagoya and Ficadenti sides, when they go 1-0 up, they try everything to break the flow of the game up, and you know how it is, the dark arts, they do it very well. And I think they did it against Yokohama earlier in the season, and this was another one. And it just became a very bitty game with very few chances, and they riled Kashima up a bit. And Kashima were guilty of bits themselves, I'm not saying they weren't, and they got the red card as well in the middle of this second half, which Alano was a terrible tackle, the second yellow is a bit of a stamp on him. I think he could have got a straight red card if he wasn't already booked, so that's pretty cool. They just got frustrated, Kashima, the way that they just couldn't break them down in normal play, and Nagoya would just take every moment and waste a bit of time and that sort of thing, so it really got to them. And as for the goal that you mentioned, Aoki, he's come in this season, mainly because nothing really matters this year. I think Kwasunte is on the bench. He's obviously, in my opinion, a better goalkeeper, but you're giving Oki, the young goalkeeper, some experience. I think it's working well for him. I think in general he's playing quite well. There was one double save that he made, Kanazaki, with the header that was really well saved low down, and then Soma on the rebound maybe 4 or 5 yards out, and Oki made a fine save from that. So at least his shot stopping is very good, but it's just occasionally the playing out from the back. It happens to every goalkeeper pretty much in this league. But yeah, he is a poor clearance, and Kashima defensively weren't set to have to react to giving the ball away so quickly. They were all over the place, so it was so easy for Schmidt to head it down to Abe, I believe it was. Then he found Mateus in all sorts of space as well. And you can't give Mateus space because his finish is absolutely sublime, as it has been all season. So it was a lovely way for Nagoya to wrap up the game. Kashima will be pretty disappointed to concede that one. But on the balance of play, I don't think they really deserved anything from it.
No, fair enough. So, yeah, it did end up being a pretty dirty afternoon for Antlers. Izumi, who gave away the penalty early doors, was forced off through injury just after the half hour and replaced by Ryotaro Araki. And then, as Sam's mentioned, Juan Alano picked up 2 yellow cards in the space of 7 minutes just past the hour, and indeed was sent off in the 68th minute after a very ordinary tackle. You don't even really want to call it a tackle. It was a stamp, as Sam has said, and no complaints from Alano, as the referee brandished a second yellow card, so he'll be missing Antlers' next league game. A hugely creditable result for Grampus, as we say, has moved them up to third spot in the table. And now we come on to the dearth of goals from the other games that were played on Saturday. There was one other goal that we have to discuss, Sam, but the other games ended at 0-0. But we will begin our roundup of those other games by mentioning the other main piece of news from J1 that that emerged on Sunday, and that is that Shimizu S-Pulse's first year Australian manager Peter Klimovsky has been relieved of his duties, with his team in 17th in the table, level on points with the bottom placed Vegalta Sendai. I don't know, Sam, we wondered basically from the start of this season, with Klimovsky coming in, S-Pulse obviously narrowly avoiding relegation last season, and the fact that relegation wasn't a prospect this year, we presumed that Klimovsky would have the run of things to basically bed in his ideas and get Shimizu ready for a push up the table in 2021. But unfortunately that has not been the case. So how did you react when you heard the news that Klimovsky was being sacked earlier today, Sunday?
Yeah, I was quite surprised. I imagined that he'd take this season, get whatever comes out of it, and then build on to next season. But I looked, there was some quotes attributed to him in the Sydney Morning Herald, I think it was, where it basically seems like Klimovsky has resigned. They've had 2 transfer windows this summer and autumn, and he hasn't been able to get any players in. Maybe that's a coronavirus base, but he expected a bit more backing and hasn't got that. So it looks like he's just walked. It's a strange timing, I thought, after a decent draw, as we'll get onto with Kashua. And it's not like they've had a full week to prepare for this. It seems a weird time to resign in between 2 quite games in quick succession. So that caught me by surprise. It's a shame, I think, because obviously the results have been pretty poor and there hasn't really been a great deal of improvement in performance. But the way this season has gone, if you're going to implement the style that Klimovsky wants, and it's such a change for what Shimizu have been used to, you need time on the training ground, and he hasn't been afforded that this season with all the circumstances around this season. So it's really hard to judge how it would have gone. I'm disappointed that it's not going to continue. It was an interesting project. You've seen how it worked with Yokohama, and it would have been, if he'd got the backing at Shimizu, what could he have done next season? So, it's a little bit of a surprise that maybe they've kind of not seen eye to eye behind the scenes. They've not necessarily maybe there's been a lack of faith from the board and that he was kind of sensing that. So, yeah, it's disappointing and a little bit of a surprise, but I've seen that he's looking for another job in Japan, hopefully. So, yeah, hopefully we'll get to see his project come to fruition at another J-League club.
Okay, then. Well, I haven't seen those tweets and those quotes, so I apologise to Pete there for using the word sacked. If indeed he wasn't, then, yeah, I certainly don't want to tar him with that brush, and if it's his decision to stand down, then, yeah, I fully accept that and the reasons behind it. So, yeah, full disclosure there. Yeah, I'm not particularly up to speed with the news of the day. I just knew that Peter Klimovsky is not the manager of Espoirs anymore and presumed that it was a club decision. But if it indeed has come from him, then, yeah, I apologise for my terminology there. So, yeah, it comes on the back of one of their more positive results in recent weeks, dare I say months, Sam. It's a 0-0 draw away at Kashiwa, admittedly a Reysol team who was missing Michael Olunga, who we believe was rested for this game. He was in attendance at Hitachi Dai, but was not included in the 18-man squad. So, yeah, Espoirs, well, they had numerous chances to win this game. They matched Reysol on the shot count, but yeah, neither team was unable to score a goal. But yeah, ultimately for Shimizu, it's seven games without a win now for Klimovsky. He leaves with seven game winless run after their final win of his reign in charge was in the middle of September away at Shonan. So this game on Saturday afternoon then, probably most of us expected a comfortable Reysol win, but Shimizu more than held their own here and had their chances to win it themselves.
Yeah, I almost think they were the better side in this game. They had changed their formation. They'd been playing three at the back and just kind of putting square pegs in round holes, which wasn't really working. So they went back to their kind of more customary 4-3-3 formation. They looked a lot more settled at the back. Obviously, Noah Lunga helps them in that respect. Agoya's a decent striker, but he does need a few chances before he's going to score. And he had a couple here, but kind of snatched at them. But in general, I thought Shimizu went forward quite well. They didn't necessarily carve out a clear-cut opportunity, but they had a lot of possession. They caused problems. And at the back, when you wouldn't necessarily expect it against Kashiwa, you'd expect them to be picked apart quite comfortably. But really, they defended pretty well. And when they did get past them, then the goalkeeper Umeda made a few decent saves. So I thought it was a positive performance from them, which makes Klimovsky leaving even more surprising, because he's obviously had a bit a week, 10 days to prepare for this game. They'd looked a lot better, so it seemed quite positive for them. But yeah, he was let go, or whatever it might be, earlier today as we record on Sunday. I liked that he was all buried underneath the Kengo Nakamura retirement speech. That's what you do with any bad news, is bury it under something else. But yeah, it was surprising. I thought Shimizu played really well. Kashiwa, after their victory on Wednesday against Tokyo, I'd expect them to continue here. But yeah, they were pretty toothless, to be honest. And obviously, when you lose a goal scorer like Olunga, you're going to lose a lot from your attack. And that was pretty evident.
Yes, indeed. All right, well, why don't we cover the other two nil-nils, Sam, before we finish with the only other goal that we have to report from the match day at the BMW Stadium. So, the teams are in ninth and tenth in the table. Urawa and Hiroshima both went away to bottom half opposition and, were unable to return with better than a point after 0-0 draws. Reds headed to Oita and Hiroshima to bottom club Sendai. For Sendai, this is a personal triumph for Jakub Slovic, of course, their Polish goalkeeper, who has had to put up with all sorts of defending in front of him in recent weeks as Sendai sunk to the foot of the table. But, Slovic, he might have celebrated when he got back to the change room as if he'd won the World Cup after a long-awaited clean sheet. I guess, Sam, for the teams in mid-table, Reds and Hiroshima, I think we've already established that they won't be troubling the ACL places. But, after recent decent good spells of form, they would have both been disappointed to not win on their travels on Saturday, I would suggest.
Yeah, Hiroshima, they kind of, I think they've given up the ghost. They made a lot of changes in this game. They pretty much put out a B team to go against Sendai and still dominated the game. It was another game where Slovic was against the opposition on his own, pretty much. He made another set of fine saves. I mean, it'd be interesting to get into his mind to see what is he thinking at being at Sendai, just being completely overworked every week, but at least he's keeping himself busy, I suppose. But yeah, Hiroshima, they had a lot of chances, couldn't get past the goalkeeper, but in the end, Sendai offered nothing going forward until the last 10 minutes, and then my friend Shun Nagasawa produced a very good header, which Osako, who for the life of me, I can't even think why he's not been playing more often. He's already a young goalkeeper. This is the perfect season to play a young goalkeeper in the way that Oki's playing for Kashima. I think Osaka should be playing more, but he made a fantastic save low down from Nagasawa, and Hirayoka is there 3 yards out on the rebound and blazes it over. It's just horrible miss. Sendai, it's just, it kind of sums up the way Sendai season's going, because if you can't score that, I mean, you're not going to score any goal. So that was disappointing for them, but I mean, they come away with a point. I don't really know how otherwise, because this was a procession really for Hiroshima's reserves.
Yeah, and then what about Reds then? It looked from the highlights that Oita had the better of the chances, although Yuki Muto might have sealed another Reds smash and grab on their travels late on, but was unable to apply the finishing touch.
Yeah, this was Aurora, such a disappointment. I really don't like watching Aurora at the moment. I mean, they've got enough talent there. They should be a really good team, but just, I don't know if it's the tactics or the lack of tactics or whatnot. They started really well, actually. They were pressing Oita high, which is what you have to do with Oita, because they will just try and pass it out from the back. But if you press them, they'll make mistakes. So they did that for 10 minutes and then gave up. And just the rest of that half, except for a spell at the end, they were second best. Takazawa got in behind Hashioka a couple of times. Nishikawa had to make a few good saves. But the defending is just, Oita, it's so easy for them to get forward, and the defence just stands around and watches, and it's kind of, oh wait, they've had a shot, maybe we should have done something there. And it's just very reactive football. It's not great to watch. And as you mentioned, they've come in the back of a couple of good performances, the 6-0 win, then the win over Suarez. So I expected a lot better, but as you say, Oita were, I thought, the better team. Takazawa were just on a one-man mission to try and score. He had a header late in the second half that he went wide, then there was another one on the stretch where he hits the crossbar. So really, Oita will be kicking themselves that they haven't won this game. But yeah, Nishikawa bailed Aurora out, as he has done on a few times. And they did have chances, as you said. Muto could have scored. There was a chance where Leonardo played Martinez in late, but he wasted his chance just blazing over the bar. So a really poor performance from Aurora. Oita were a little bit better. It was still not a great game of football. This was really two mid-table teams going through the motions, it felt. And not great for the neutral viewer.
No, fair enough then. All right, so the last game that we'll cover from Matchday 25, it did actually have a goal, and it came from Hiroshi Ibusuki for host Shonan Bellmare as they won a Kanagawa derby against Yokohama FC. Ibusuki finally got his goal, and I think he was as surprised as everybody else in the stadium with his finish in the 79th minute, because that had come after he somehow had failed to score with a free header from 4 yards, quite shortly before, but earlier on in the second half. A free kick routine. Yokohama FC, for some reason, dropped players back on the post, which meant that Shauna didn't have to worry about an offside line. Ibusuki found himself 4 yards out, but yes, there was was unable to score with his header from 4 yards out. It's not really that funny, listeners, but Sam and I, we have history with Ibruski, but he was finally able to score it. It was a good finish, Sam. We have to give the big man credit. Shauna, they've shown some signs of life in recent weeks. They're now well and truly off the foot of the table, and the fans at the BMW Stadium, long suffering this season, no question. But they've been rewarded here with a fourth win of the season for their team.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this game. I don't know if it was just delirium compared to the rest of the games being played in and around it, but yeah, it was very open. Both teams had their chances. In Yokohama, the post twice, they were believe themselves to be unlucky to have come away with no points from this one. But yeah, Ibruski, I mean, I don't know what to say about his head. I don't know why they've dropped the men back. They've not actually marked Ibruski, and it's not like you can't see him. He's quite a tall figure in there, so it's chipped to him, and then I have no idea how he misses. And then he goes from that to being prime Ronaldo with his finish. It's a really good goal play. It gets it just outside the area, one touch, gets into the box, then fires it bottom corner, right footed. A really clinical finish. I don't think I've seen that side of his game before. But yeah, full credit to him and to Shonan. They've been at the bottom all season, but it's not like they've been pummeled necessarily. They've always been in games. They've lost quite a few 3-2 that they've done this season. So I'm happy for them to have got a victory. They've got some decent players, and they've gone for this. I don't know if they deserve the 3 points. I thought Yokohama had their chance as well, where there was Sugimoto's diving header, which Tani had no chance, but it hit the post. Then there was Senema had a cushioned volley off the post. I think the 89th minute it was. And then Tani made one good save from Nakayama, who's back from injury, he's been a real miss for Yokohama. The way that he played last season in J2 is kind of similar to the way Matsuo was playing, and you thought if he played all season, maybe he'd be at a similar level to Matsuo, but he's missed out through injury, so that's a bit of a shame. But yeah, Yokohama had their chances, but Shonan took the one that was that mattered most, so yeah, full credit to them.
Yeah, fair enough. Then yeah, we have been missing Yusuke Matsuo in the last couple of games, haven't we, Sam? Hopefully he'll be back soon. I haven't heard anything about any long-term injury, so hopefully, he's working his way back to fitness. And we might even see him as early as Tuesday when the next round of fixtures will be played.
Sorry to any Yokohama FC supporters that are listening, hoping he might be there, but he dislocated his shoulder, so he's undergone surgery. So I think this was 2 or 3 weeks ago, so he's out for up to 2 months. Ooh. So we're not sure if he's going to be able to see any of the seasons, which is a real shame because, as we've mentioned so many times this season, he's been a real bright spark for this season.
All right. Well, I'm not sure if you'd mentioned that on an earlier episode, Sam, but apologies if you had. I'd missed that news. So, that's a crying shame. Yokohama FC obviously having to cope then without their leading light so far this season for what looks like the remainder of the season. So that is a crying shame. Well, we most definitely will not see him on a Tuesday night then when the Yokohama FC host Oita, one of 8 top flight games to be played on Tuesday. It's a national holiday in Japan, a culture day. 7 games from match day 26 will be played, and one involving Yokohama F. Marinos will be brought forward from match day 31. That's F. Marinos hosting Kashima at the Nissan Stadium. Elsewhere, leaders Kawasaki entertain Sapporo, as we've mentioned already. But without question, the main event on Tuesday is the Osaka Derby at the Yanmar Stadium. It's Cerezo hosting Gamba, with Cerezo looking to get back at level on points with their visitors after, obviously, Gamba moved ahead on the weekend when Cerezo were not in action. Hiroshima and Urawa at the Edion Stadium looks an interesting game as well. As we've mentioned, wrapping up the rest of match day 25, these two teams are next to each other in the table with the Reds 9th and Hiroshima 10th. So that should be interesting. And, Kawasaki, we expect them to beat Sapporo, of course. And then if Cerezo can do them a favour against Gumba, that will drastically reduce their magic number to seal the title. And, obviously we won't have a podcast straight after that, Sam, but we will be touching on the results from those games on Tuesday in next week's episode. That's after FC Tokyo and Kashiwa contest the Levain Cup final at the new National Stadium on Saturday. And then on the Sunday, the 8th, there will be two top flight games played to make up games in hand in the case of Sendai versus Tosu, and also games brought forward due to the ACL in regards to Yokohama FC hosting ACL club Kobe. That game brought forward from match day 28. Sam, plenty to look forward to in the next week in Japanese football and in the top flight in particular.
Yeah, should be a really good week. The Osaka Derby, a proper six-pointer as we go challenging for the ACL. And I've got your commentary to look forward to on Saturday morning. So, yeah, all the best for that, for the Levain Cup final. Hopefully you get to enjoy a very good game. I won't say which team should win. I will remain neutral on that. But hopefully, yeah, you can enjoy it and everything goes well.
Thank you very much. And, yeah, hopefully I'll be able to remain neutral as well and give, my best commentary on the game. And, as I said, I will be leaving my red and blue glasses at home for that particular game. But, yes, as we record on Sunday night, I have a Zoom call scheduled with the J-League for Monday afternoon. It'll probably actually be interrupting my editing of this episode. So, obviously, a conversation that we need to have before the game, just in terms of what I'm allowed to say and what I'm not allowed to say, if I'm allowed to criticise the referees or this, that or the other. So, we'll just get all of that thrashed out on Monday afternoon, and obviously we'll get this podcast posted around the same time. Hopefully, I'll still have a... my appointment will still be on for Saturday, and as you say, Sam, hopefully I'll be able to enjoy it, and obviously I'm expecting a terrific occasion and an excellent game. So thanks for your kind words there, and very much looking forward to it. All right, well, I think we'll leave it there. It was great to chat with Neil, of course, and over the last couple of weeks, we hope we've done Kawasaki justice. They've obviously been an irresistible juggernaut this season, and wanted to try and give them their due. And Kengo Nakamura as well, obviously going out on a high, and he deserves that. No questions asked. All right, Sam. Well, we kind of almost said goodbye before, but we'll do it for proper now. Great to catch up with you again, and look forward to doing so again next week.
Yeah, look forward to it. I've got my full first week of lockdown 2 here in the UK to enjoy, so that'll be great. But thankfully, there's some J-League to kind of keep me interested.
Yes, indeed. An early start for you on Tuesday, so I'm sure you're you're looking forward to that indeed. All right, well, that is it for this week's episode of the J-Talk Podcast. Sam and I would like to thank Neil Debnam for his time on this week's episode, our patrons for their support on Patreon, and, of course, you for listening wherever you are. We'll be back next week to round up a very busy week in the top flight. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The J-Talk Podcast.